CliffCentral.com.
Yes, good morning, everybody. We are live. It's Wednesday morning. It's already the halfway point of winter has been reached and has been passed. So we are now supposedly getting towards warmer. I'll believe it when I see it. We're joined this morning by Simpi Mtetwa, who is in the studio in Johannesburg, and by Carvin Goldstone. Hey, Carvin, how you doing, man? Yeah, that's what they say, but I don't know. I mean, listen, these Canadas can't be trusted. It's like the weather at night on the TV. You never know what to believe. How are you doing, man? What's been happening with you?
I've been good. I'm in Durban, so Durban's been interesting.
Yeah?
Lots of, like, new things happening in Durban. So you're finding new ways to survive. Like, we still have water rationing now. It's like a consistent thing. So
water rationing
between certain hours, there's no water. So you have load shedding and water rationing
Jesus.
At the same time.
They're trying to make it as horrible as possible to live in South Africa, right?
So for me, like, not having water was like one of those things I just didn't understand from a day to day. And then after the floods, it became like a consistent thing. And then you realize, like, I take load shedding, but that's where we are. Like, we're just deciding which one you'd rather have.
Well, I mean, isn't it horrible that it's like Sophie's Choice? I mean, you now have to make a decision between two really horrible things. And you almost go, oh, we're so lucky. We only had load shedding today. We didn't have load shedding and the water rationing. It's ridiculous. But anyway.
Yeah, it's like the politics in some ways. Like, people are like, who are you going to vote for? I'm like, well, the way things are, it's like having sugar diabetes. They're having diabetes, and then they're saying, what do you want, Coke, Fanta, or Sprite? And you're like, okay, people are going to kill me quicker.
Oh, Jesus. Well, let me introduce everybody to you, in case they don't know who you are, in which case they've probably been under a rock. But Carvin Goldstone is one of the biggest names in South African comedy at the moment. He's the winner of the Comics Choice Comedian of the Year 2018. Previous winners of that were Trevor Noah and Loyiso Gola, among others. He's also a multiple award-winning broadcast journalist, having received 4 Vodacom Journalist of the Year awards. That's quite a balancing act, comedian and journalist, right?
Well, you know, you only serve one master, so journalism had to go.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, if you're going to choose, one, like, one is exactly the opposite of the other in some ways, because one is, you know, factual and sensible and rational. The other one is like wacky and funny and entertaining. And like, I've never been a journalist, and then people will say, but you're on the radio. And I'm like, no, just because you're on the radio doesn't mean you could be an entertainer, but you're not necessarily a journalist. I've never been a journalist, and being a journalist, you have certain things you got to do. Some of them are really, really hard work, and it's boring, and it's, you know, it's about ethics, and it's about research and doing things properly. And the other one is like just as much work, except you aren't held to a professional standard like the others. Yeah. You're obviously in competition with your colleagues, but it's a totally different ball game, right?
Yeah, unless, you know, like in 2019, for the first time in my life, after doing comedy for about 15 years, I performed in front of my parents. So they'd never seen a show. Huh. And yeah, you have to be factual then, because and my parents live in London. So you feel like it's more with my father. My father's a farmer from KZN South Coast. Like, even though he's been in London for 20 years, he can't lose who he is. So you just like worry that any stage is going to jump up and say, it's all lies. This boy is telling lies.
Right. And I suppose in some ways they were more proud of you when you were a journalist, because they could tell people, my son's a journalist. When you're a comedian, even if you're earning better money or you're having more fun or you're really being your authentic self, it's a damn sight harder. And people don't always, he calls himself a comedian. It's like, he's an Instagram influencer. You know, you had to win a couple of awards there to make it count.
Yeah, and you know, like, my parents, when they left me as a journalist. They left me, like, happy, like, you know, be fine, hey? And someone told me, you know, your son is on stage telling jokes now. And they're like, what? Like, yeah, since you guys left, he's doing his own thing.
That's so funny, because my parents have never really understood what I do. And
Yeah, I can imagine. I can relate.
And they probably think I'm wasting my time waiting for the next big thing to come. I've got bad news for them. there's no hidden career behind this one. You know, this is the whole thing. Yeah. Anyway, listen. So let me.
Up to.
No, exactly. So, I mean, there's lots that we've got to talk about with you, but I do want to point out that you've been performing in the UK. You've done shows in the Middle East, Australia, New Zealand, Swaziland, Zimbabwe, across Southern Africa. What's your favorite audience when you're standing up doing stand-up?
So if I had to make it generic, my favorite audience would be the unknown. So that unknown fact is always interesting. So no matter which part of the country or the world, you know, the less they know about you, the kind of more interesting it is for me. When the audience knows you and they follow you, there is a bit of liberty. They let you do things that you probably wouldn't get away with in like a different space because they're there for you.
Right.
These are your people. They think it's funny. So I kind of enjoy the idea of going into a country or region where there are fans, but like a lot of them are just like interested. Like, what's going to happen here?
Well, there's almost an honesty to it, right? Because if they're your fan, then there's an expectation. Whereas if there's an honest transaction and they're like, oh, well, there's this new comedy show going on and I don't know who this guy is, but let's give him a try. And they arrive with a better attitude in some ways.
Yeah, they do. And they it's so wild because I was at the, I think it was the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a solo show there and... So I expect South Africans to turn up wherever I am. And then, like, I do. So I usually do, like, a roll call. Any South Africans. And, like, I was surprised. Like, maybe 20% or 30% of the audience picked up their hands. The rest was just people. And I was like, guys, yeah.
Wow. Okay. All
right. Like, yeah, we just saw this thing. We thought this would be cool to come to.
So, yeah. So
it's a thing. It's the voices, right? It's the voices, like especially in big festivals like that one, where you've got tons of European comics and American and Australian. Like, oh, there's an odd voice here. It's not Trevor. There's another voice from that.
Right. But in general, I mean, like what? South African comedy is suddenly quite respectable because it was, you know, there was a time where I don't think anyone really took comedy in South Africa, even the comedians didn't take it that seriously. And then thanks again to people, and it's always worth mentioning these guys, and I'm just glad and you know, I'm proud to know them. People like David Kao, people like John Flismas, people like Mel Miller. You know, these guys are the ones who made comedy in South Africa what it is and opened it up for a whole lot of younger people. And there's just such a swathe and such a variety of really, really funny people doing their thing. And it just makes me happy because as shit as the economy is and as hard as it is to live in South Africa, and I'm not complaining, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else in the world, doing comedy and being able to make a living out of it is an awesome thing. And
yeah,
you know, you're putting laughter back into the world, and it's no small accomplishment, dude. It's great.
Yeah, and it's also it's so like soul satisfying for you as an individual if you live in the moment. I think what happened to me, especially during COVID, was you started looking back into some of the things you achieved and done, and the life that you've had as a comedian, and you realize you didn't live in a lot of those moments. I'm not sure yourself.
Yeah,
if you guys, like when you look back, so many great things happened to you, and you actually didn't live in that moment.
Oh,
you kind of just assume this is how it goes. This is
I still can't believe I was paid so much money when I was on radio to just do 3 hours and go straight home afterwards. And then, you know, like money was just not something I thought about until we started this business, and you realize how difficult it is to not only find enough money to keep the place going and to pay the people who work with you, but also to then be able to just take a little bit home for yourself. And it's fucking hard. It's difficult compared to just being paid, which is what I was so used to. And I wasn't living in the moment. I was like, I'm on radio, I'm on television. This could carry on forever. I'm having a lot of fun. You're famous just by virtue of being on those two mediums. And you'd take a whole lot for granted. Also, you're meeting people every weekend. You know, I was doing DJing around the country and the network of people I was exposed to and the variety of age, everyone from like 18 to 80. And I tried to live in the moment. I tried to take it all in. But there was a part of that that just, it was kind of life happening. And I was always thinking about tomorrow rather than right now. And I think COVID helped a lot of us to deal with that. But can I say, on the COVID front, there was a letter sent out by the Minister of Health to all the provincial ministers and the deputy ministers and so on yesterday about just scrapping all of this legislation. Now, I mean, to me, and we don't have to talk about this for a long time because I think everyone is sick to death of COVID, but let's just get rid of this shit. It should have been given up 6 months ago. I don't know why we're bothering with these masks. If you'll admit that masks don't work now, you have to admit that they've never worked. And if they've never worked, why did you put people through this? I go through the shops now and, you know, I see people, I don't see all of the people because you can't see whether they're smiling. You can't smile back at them. You know, you can tell a little bit by the eyes, but I think we've missed out. And I think I feel sorry for children who've been learning to read and to speak at school without being able to see their teachers' mouths. It's a very hard thing to do, hey? If you're deaf, then you've had the worst 2.5 years ever because you've had to lip read without being able to read lips, especially if you're young. And you think about all the jobs that have been lost. And you think about all these just destructive government decisions that have been made over the last 2.5 years. I know they will claim, and this is the only reason they won't go to jail, more's the pity on that front. They will claim, oh, no, we tried to save lives, but they didn't demonstrably save a single life by their stupid rules. And we're now sitting here 2.5 years later, and they're still buggering around with laws like masks and sanitizers. And, you know, I sit in the office yesterday. You remember when those people who used to go down the aisle with a trolley in the plane, remember when those people were there to serve you a drink or give you a snack? That was their whole job. And then suddenly they became these really important bureaucrats in the sky who could have you offloaded from a plane if you didn't pull your mask over your nose. And suddenly they felt they felt powerful. And I'm not having a go at cabin crew because I know they've got a job just like everyone else. But they're all these little people, the guy at the shop, you know, the person at the gym entrance who says to you, "Hey, can you please put on your mask?" You're like, you know, you were probably once you were probably once a nice person. But now this is your thing, and this gives you power, and now suddenly in charge of stuff that you shouldn't be in charge of. And it's made people...
Is that a jump person?
Well, I mean, like, you think about these neighbors who in the beginning of COVID were like, ratting each other out for jogging in their own garden. And you're like, what kind of madness took hold of us at that point? And there's still some people who are stuck in that madness, hey? There's still some people who are attached to it in a big way. There's some people who just don't want to let go of the masks. They don't want to go back to normal because this has made them feel a little bit safer or a little bit more anonymous or whatever their thing is that it did for them. It's fucked up, man. I've had enough of it. Let's end this stuff now.
I got some friends who haven't come out since the pandemic started, and they stay at home.
Are they still your friends?
Well, yeah, that's a good question because you kind of just... Well, you know, the thing about friendship is it's weird because, I don't know, Garrett, like, there's probably people you call friends you haven't spoken to in 5 years or 2 years. You kind of pick it up where you left off.
Right.
But that's something I also discussing with myself is, like, you have these people that they're your friends because they've always been your friends, but are they really your friends? Because if you need to do something, can you do it with them? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That's what friends are.
Like, right, exactly.
Yeah, so we all kind of have friends that are almost like just friends because they've always been friends, almost like family. They're just family because they've been family. And like friends is something you can still like choose and stuff. But so, yeah, they are kind of those friends you hold on to because they're part of your life story. But then are they like your actual everyday friends? You go to a list of who you're going to call to hang out this weekend. And they're your friends, but you're not going to call them. It's weird.
No, and also it's going to be weird for them because they've become desocialized, if that's even a word. I mean, Simpiwe, you were in the office. You were in the office yesterday when I ran in there. I was like, guys, we don't have to wear masks anymore. And like, there was a half response. Like, half the people were like, ah. Oh. Inside, they didn't say it. And the other half of the people were like, yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not criticizing either side because I understand that there are people who have been really worried or who have lost family members or lost friends or whatever. There's some serious stuff that happened over the last 2.5 years.
Yeah.
But the mask thing, masks had fuck all to do with anyone's life being saved. Did nothing for anybody. It's ridiculous. I mean, here's a comment from someone who's listening to us now. This is just unbelievable. So apparently, this is on the cruise ships. what they did there is they forced the crew to wear masks, but the passengers didn't have to. Like, that has got nothing to do here. Peter John says, I work on cruise ships. Our guests don't wear masks, but the crew do. Think about that for a second. And you saw this, I remember, at the Met Gala last year. You had all these celebrities and all these rich and famous and powerful people walking around with these fancy dresses and fancy outfits on and kissing each other in the air and, like, kissing each other on the hand and in the face and all that stuff. But then you saw in the background, like, the waiters and waitresses with their masks on, and you're like, oh, I see what this is. This has never been about a disease. This is all about control and deciding how important you are on the scale. If you're really important, you don't have to wear a mask. Remember all those politicians who went to have their hair cut while it was illegal? Those politicians who carried on having parties, did whatever they wanted. Boris Johnson famously did this at number 10. Nancy Pelosi went for a haircut. The governor of California, Gavin Newsom, he went and had dinner with a whole bunch of his friends, including a whole bunch of people who were his health advisors. And none of them had masks on. But all the waiters had to wear masks. So that's what this was.
It's the same here. If you go to a restaurant, just look around.
I know.
All the waiters are wearing. And everyone's like, this mask is like, it's like an entry. It's like a student card to enter the door.
And
once you get inside, it's like, oh.
And it's a waste of money.
It's a waste of money. And you know, Carvin, I'm looking at you and Simpiwe this morning, and I'm thinking about, you know, the people who are listening to us, and without a smile, like, you walk into a restaurant. Keith says here, I own a couple of restaurants, and it's hell on earth. These masks, they've lost their smiles. I think people have to be taught again to smile. And, like, how to interact normally with each other. You know, you can tell so much about someone in the first few seconds. You know, they say body language counts way more than words.
Yeah.
If you can't see someone smile, it makes it very hard to build a relationship with them, even if it's in a meeting or, you know, any of that stuff. I mean, Simpiwe, you've been in a couple of meetings with us in the last week, and some of them are online, and we're doing some in person. And the online ones are... they're fine, but it's not as good as being in person, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like looking at a screen and you're like, hi. I'm Samir.
When you bump into people and you're like, hi.
Yeah.
Oh. Like, you like, grab them.
Yeah. Right.
And then you put out your hand to shake or whatever, and then you feel like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
now you have to ask. You have to ask, can I hug you? Do you handshake? Are we social distancing?
Yeah.
There's a whole intro. It's a whole intro.
Space Brother says, Cliff Central, the only thing that the mask was good for was realizing how shit your own breath smelled.
It was an outside.
Oh, man.
So now you know.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Masks are a waste of face, said Parallel Parking. That's beautiful. I'm gonna steal that if you don't mind, because that's a really good line. I like that. Dud says he was in Bali lately, and guests have no masks. Employees of hotels, restaurants, etc., are wearing masks. It's stupidity in the nth degree, he says. I'm just paraphrasing because there's some spelling things there. Dogoza says,
yeah.
Wait, did I miss something here? Has the mask mandate been lifted? Not like we've been following it where I live. Well, it has been lifted. I mean, the Minister of Health has basically sent out a circular to say to all the deputy ministers and provincial ministers, look, we're gonna repeal all this legislation. It's over now. It's pretty much done. So it's really just a question of them dotting their I's and crossing their T's. But really, we should have stopped wearing these things, and we should have stopped following these dumb laws 6 months ago. And I think a little bit of civil disobedience, which South Africans are good at. You know, we did it with e-tolls. We do it with
we're not so good at it.
You don't think so?
I know.
What?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we as good as we think. I think COVID proved that we're actually very compliant. You know, let me tell you, living in, when I was during looting, which was last year, the looting, and what I did realize was the police, for example, during the looting, kind of let things happen.
Yeah.
But then as soon as like, I would say law-abiding citizens started to get around, get to shops, they were very, like, strict, started policing people. Tanya, they were all over the road. And I realized that the police in South Africa are very good at policing law-abiding citizens. So they're completely like useless when it comes to like people who don't want to obey the law.
Well, isn't that true for everything? I mean, that's like, you know, the people who pay the taxes are the ones who follow the laws, and they get knocked for six with taxes. The people who don't bother to pay taxes, don't follow the law. No one cares about them. It seems that they get away scot-free. And I've always said, you could be arrested in this country for dealing with weed, but you steal billions with the Guptas, and you can choose a house for yourself in Dubai.
Yeah. I think we need a little bit more. I suppose maybe I'm thinking, and sometimes we make the mistake of seeing the world through a middle-class perspective. So I just feel sometimes like the middle class is very submissive to the laws and the government. And especially like, maybe it's also where I live, you know what I'm saying? I don't see a lot of spirit of protest in that group, putting that middle class group who would have a much bigger voice because they do pay a lot of tax, and you know what I'm saying.
That's well, for me, I mean, like, listen, no one stands up for the middle class. We're talking about them, so maybe we're the first people to do this, because what happens is you've got a whole bunch of people who are poor and no one cares about them, and they call them the working class, but in this country they're unemployed, so they're the unworking class. And you get people in the middle class and in academia and in politics who claim to speak on their behalf, but they don't actually, which is just, it's like one of the most horrible things you can hear is when someone's like, well, you know, as and they almost speak as if they've got a mandate, like some group of poor people got together and gave them a piece of paper and said, here, speak on our behalf. Because they never actually ask poor people on the TV. They always ask some representative of an NGO who claims to be the person who speaks for the poor people. And then you've got the rich people who don't care because they can afford everything no matter what happens. You know, if the shares in the stocks or Bitcoin or someone's savings gets obliterated, they don't care. They've got plenty of hard cash to deal with. So no one needs to worry about the rich people. The middle classes are like the ones who keep the wheels turning. They're the ones who have to go to work every day. They're the ones who have to pay. They're the ones who have to put their kids through school. The ones who have to, you know, keep the engine of the economy and all of the services in this country going. So I think it's right to look at them. And we were talking about this on Friday, and I'll reiterate it because I think it's interesting. They say about 30% of the people, they've done research around this, about 30% of the people are compliant and will do whatever they're told. Another 30% of people will rebel. So it's interesting, exactly half and half. And maybe sometimes the rebellious ones get heard more than the compliant ones. And sometimes they specifically drown out the rebellious ones, so the compliant ones sound like they're in the majority. But then that leaves 40% of people in the middle who need to be convinced. And I think a lot of people fall into that category. And it's taken those people, sometimes it took them like a couple of months. And I've got friends who admit that they changed their mind from those first weeks of COVID when we were all scared. We were all like, oof, I wonder how bad this is.
For me, Garrett, I was on the, I work on the cruise ship from time to time. Like, I'll go in for like 2 weeks and just do some shows.
Right.
And I think it was end of Jan, I came off, in 2020, I came off the ship. And when I came up, they were doing temperature checks. And I was like, so weird. Because remember, January, end of January, why were they doing temperature checks? And it already kind of started the fear that this new world. I remember feeling at that point in time that, like, something's happening. That we just, they're not exactly saying how widespread, but something's going on. And now, as it unfolded, you started thinking to yourself. Of course, I think a lot of us are confused in that early, like, 2020 run. About how will this go? So we're listening to everything. We're listening to every bit of information that comes out of the government, and you start trusting. And then they put, like, you know, they had like the health minister, and then everyone was so confident. The health minister's a doctor. So lucky to have a health minister.
And then we find out that he's
the biggest scammy ever.
Then we find out about digital vibes and how the guy's actually on the take for PPE money. I'm son of a bitch.
Some of the things he was saying as a like as a medical whatever professional, I was just like, what is this? Like, is he just making this stuff up?
Well,
a lot of stuff was made up.
We need to go over this territory because I still think that there's a lot that needs to be accounted for. Some people made decisions, powerful people in South Africa and the world, and really our guys didn't lead the charge by any means. They just followed what everyone else in the world was doing. And that's no excuse, because every country needs its own set of solutions. And I still think the world owes us a debt of gratitude for coming up with the Omicron variant, because that's kind of what's immunized so many people and what has made made COVID a whole lot less dangerous. So, you know, the rest of the world should be saying thank you, South Africa, for starters. And then we should be putting some people in jail, people who took PPE money, people who were on medical advisory panels when they weren't giving medical advice. It was more about control and establishing dumb rules. Do you remember Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma and her anti-tobacco drive during COVID? Yeah. And the High Court found just the other day that there was no sensible reason to have banned smoking in South Africa other than to have made illegal cigarettes a serious business again. That's all.
Mm.
And she is not accounted for that. That there needs to be payment. She needs to be sued in her personal capacity for having made a terrible, stupid decision which had nothing to do with people's health and using the pandemic as an excuse. And everywhere in the world that people use the pandemic as an excuse, those people must be held to account. Their feet must be held close to the fire. We must find out what kind of people they really are, because the danger is they'll do it again. They'll use some other excuse to make us do stupid shit like, I don't know, walk around in shoes that are closed. Remember when they told us you couldn't go to the shops in like slops or Crocs because you would have...
You
remember that shit?
You couldn't buy Woolies chicken.
Remember that?
You couldn't buy,
chicken. Woolies
you couldn't buy pies. You couldn't... you couldn't buy snacks. You couldn't just buy anything. They were just like, oh,
yeah,
you have to be healthy.
Right. I mean, these people are not going to be held to account, I'm afraid, and they're just going to get away with it. So they'll do it again. Next time they'll use some other excuse, monkeypox or God knows what they're going to come up with. But we need to have these people held responsible. And I hate to sound like a broken record, because I know everybody's sick of talking about this stuff. But, you know, people like Anthony Fauci, who at the beginning of this was saying, oh, you don't have to wear masks. And he was like,
not a bad impersonation.
Oh,
not a bad one.
I know, it's horrible. But he was telling us explicitly not to use masks, and he was lying to us, because at that stage they needed to keep the masks for the doctors. So instead of telling us the truth, he said, "Don't worry about the masks, it's fine." Now, of course, we found out not only was he giving us bad advice on that front, but he was trying to stop us from seeking certain kinds of medication which might have helped. He was also acting on the political whims of his friends in politics. Those people cannot be trusted ever again. Zweli Mkhize, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma here in South Africa, Anthony Fauci over there, the politicians. They love this stuff, and they've made fools out of themselves, because all that's happened now is we trust them a whole lot less. Now,
We don't trust them at all.
No, exactly. I mean, all of us, ordinary people who... hey, listen, at the beginning of COVID, I was like, all right, let's do this. You know, remember, 2 weeks to flatten the curve shit. I was like, I'm going to lock down. I'm not going to see family or friends or any of that. By week three, I was like, this is bullshit. There's no way to live.
The thing is, when you say we don't trust them, again, like, guys, like...
there are people who do.
Some way we don't represent the real South Africa who might very well see Zweli Mkhize back in governments and even going for the presidency.
Yeah.
Despite what... and like, sometimes I always have to pull myself back and think, oh God, when I say, like, I say something and think to myself, well, Kovner, is this the voice of South Africa? Because when it comes to the polls, especially in this country...
Yeah, but you can only...
Of the majority of South Africa.
Voting.
But let me put you at ease on this one, because you can't speak on behalf of someone else. You can only speak on your own behalf. I think the most dangerous thing people do is when they start to claim someone else's voice as part of their own. You're like, I speak on behalf of lesbian women in wheelchairs. No, you don't. You couldn't get 10 signatures of lesbian women in wheelchairs if you wanted to. You know, and then you get people who are like, I speak on behalf of black people or white people or poor people or old people or young people or rich people or whatever. No, you don't. You speak only for yourself. And it's important that we all listen to each other. But I don't think a lot of people listen. I think a lot of people claim to have agency that they don't have. They won't even they won't say me, but they'll try to make it sound like they've got way more authority because they've got a whole bunch of people they speak on behalf of. And this is what politicians have done for years. They're like, I represent my constituents. No, you don't. 12% of them voted for you. You know, they had a by-election in Soweto the other day, which Pumi and I were talking about. And Pumi went through the detailed breakdown. Like 12%, 12% of the people in that ward of Soweto that had that by-election voted for the winning candidate. 12%. That is not a mandate of any kind.
That's true.
That's like you that's like you invite 13 of your friends to a party and all of them say it's cold, but you say it's hot. So you want to turn on the aircon, they want to start a fire. You know, that's not a good representation. You can't speak on behalf of other people. So don't worry about it.
Yeah, I suppose with the politics, because of the system, the way democracy lays, we don't have a way around that. So the majority, whoever gets the majority wins, whether that majority is a small majority, the way that it lays. So I don't know how we fix that, because one of the problems we have in South Africa, and I covered a few elections while I was a journalist, and I was a local government reporter for the Mercury newspaper, and I'd lost complete faith in the system. I lost complete faith as a young man.
Mm. Yeah.
Of course. Sure. I was sitting in those meetings, in those council meetings, and realized that the politics of majority means that, like, and this is like a real example. I'd be in that meeting, and let's say the IFP in KZN or the DA, with a great suggestion, and the majority party in Etiquette, the ANC, could just blow it off purely because it came from the opposition side.
Yeah.
And that would be that. Like, even no matter if it helped the majority of the people in the city or not, it just came from the wrong side. And that's the goal of this majority politics, is that we are all basically now at the whim of the majority.
No, this is true. I spoke to two women last night who were in that Kwasi Zabantu cult. You know that one in KwaZulu-Natal? I'm sure you've heard about it.
Whoa. Like, let me just tell you something. I come from a very conservative Pentecostal background, like Gregor. Mm-hmm. Where we grew up, Kwasi Zabantu was like a place you go to get, to get your life straight.
Yes.
So it was like, you know, he's not doing well. I think he needs to go to Kwasi Zabantu to come clean.
Right.
So when the story came out, my parents lived in England for 24 years, and they were the ones who kind of, like, you know, the religion of your home until you're old enough is kind of dictated by your parents. And then
sure.
You get old and you're like, yeah, I don't think it was all right. But so I said to this Kwasi Zabantu stuff, I was like, this is the thing that, like, you guys is a go-to. Can you see what's happening?
Well, I spoke to these two women, and it sounded to me like the way they were talking about it, and they both had very different experiences, Erica and Tlalimpilo, and they were telling me their story, which is harrowing, and you'll hear the interview next week. But the worst part of it was how the people in charge at this Kwasi Zabantu, and by the way, they're the guys who sell Aquila water as well.
Yeah.
Those guys, what they do is they maintain control over you by punishing you for things that are tiny transgressions of, like, canon law, religious law. And they beat you in public and they do things like that. And the whole point of all of that is not to turn you into a righteous human being or to actually mete out justice. The point of it is to maintain control. And someone in the comments said something just now which I thought is spot on. And that is that all of this was about punishing people. It's the oldest trick in the book, says Peter John. The third world is, always was, and always has been a petri dish for the elites. In South Africa, we like to think we're part of the former, but we are not. They like to punish us because then they make you feel like you are sick and you need to be well, even though you're fine. You know, there are lots of South Africans who are going about their business today, and I wish you luck if this is your story. Go about your business today. Try to earn your money. Try to do the best job you can. Honest, good people. I think the majority of South Africans, again, I can only divine this from the way that people behave. There are going to be people today who pay more to get to their job than it's worth because transport's so expensive for them. There are people who live in cold and miserable conditions, especially in the middle of winter, and are still getting up to make sure that their kids get to school, and getting up to make sure that they can put food on the table tonight. Those are good people, and that's the majority of South Africans. They're not sitting there in their asses trying to be useless. No one wakes up in the morning and goes, today I'm going to be as useless as I possibly can be, and feels good about that by day 10, you know? Even if you, you are the kind of person who works really hard and you want a break, after 10 days of that, you feel like you need a purpose in your life. And I look at this stuff and I think, here for 2.5 years, we've been messed around. We've been treated really badly. Enough now. End these stupid regulations. Let's start taking each other seriously again. And let's take the people who we gave these jobs of huge responsibility, let's take them a whole lot less seriously. Because I think in the last couple of months, we've learned this. I mean, there are lots of interesting comments here. And I want to get to as many of them as possible, but we've got to get to headlines too. Lindy Ntuli says, who's holding China and the WHO accountable for withholding information about the coronavirus when the outbreak started in 2019? Well, remember, you could have been banned from social media if you mentioned the Wuhan lab.
I was.
Remember?
Mm-hmm.
You were?
Yes.
I was. Yeah, I was so upset because my page was choked. And I don't have a lot of followers, but it was a significant outlet for me.
Yeah.
And I was doing these conversations on my page, and I did this piece on ivermectin, and it wasn't a piece that was saying ivermectin's right or wrong. It was actually a piece that was, I was taking two different people within SAHPRA who saying two different things, and I was like basically saying, so who do we believe? SAHPRA talking about whether ivermectin is useful, one person saying whether it still needs to, whether it's not useful, and one saying, well, it's still going through the testing, so it can't be not useful if it hasn't been through the testing, kind of. That was the crux of it. And they kind of squeezed my page. And so they took it out, they gave me a strike, and I was like, and then, well, like, as stories come up about, you know, studies, and I looked into studies before I even, like, entered the piece to say that, I'm not saying it's right, but I'm saying there's a conversation to be had.
Right. But you weren't even allowed to have those conversations, right? Because you were then, you were spreading, what did they call it, misinformation or disinformation? I can never tell the difference between the two.
And in my case, the information was like literally just, I wasn't even putting my own opinion in it. It was two clips played from different news stations, the same organization saying different things. And then what happened was, I was going to have this conversation with my parents about being vaccinated, because they're in England, so they got vaccinated before us. They were the first round. So I set up the thing. Before I went live, they cut it because it had a conversation about vaccination. And I was so, it was like so weird, because in some ways it kind of suited the agenda, because my parents got vaccinated. And, but they're like, they were
it's
just
sick.
And my page has never recovered. Like, I used to be like 100,000, 200,000 views per video. I like dwindle now in like the 3,000 to 10,000 range ever since. It's like they just identified it as a misinformation page, and they throttled it.
And they probably, whoever made those decisions probably doesn't even know who the hell you are, but they saw that, they saw the word ivermectin, and they were like, oh, he must be one of these right-wing people, so we're just going to shadow ban him. So we're going to send less traffic to his site. That's what happened. Happened to a lot of people. By the way, have you seen any change? I don't go on Twitter much, but have you noticed any change on your social media since either the end of the pandemic, which has been a slow and gradual thing, or since all that Elon Musk noise about Twitter? Because a lot of people saw their following go up or down by quite a lot when all of that happened.
So
I haven't seen a change.
Nothing for you.
I've never had one. I actually had it for I think 2 days, and I posted something, and someone on Twitter said, so what you're trying to say is, and I said, whoa, is this person? That's like, what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So what you actually said, and I deleted it immediately. I was like, nah, I don't need that. I don't need to be like reinterpreted on Twitter all the time. It's like only 140 characters. So I've like literally had it for like a short while and gone. I was like, nah, I don't need that. And that's like 8 years ago. I was like, psh. So
whenever not missing I put it, much.
I missed all of it, and I don't feel like I've missed anything.
No, you haven't. There's still no edit button, so you haven't missed anything. People are still, they're still useless human beings, so you have not missed anything.
Yeah, man. And people always say to me, well, how can you not have Twitter? I'm like, you know what? I don't know if it would make me, like, more popular, but I don't think it would make me happier, if that makes sense.
Mm-mm. Definitely not. One of the best things you could do is just give yourself a diet of social media. Don't eat at all, because you're just going to get unhealthy and unfit mentally and emotionally.
And my phone got stolen in December. A weird thing, like this is a scam. I'm talking about a scam just now. It happened to us this week. But in December, I parked my car at a petrol station. And there's a scam where they click, before you lock your car, they pull the door. So there was a car next to me, but I didn't think anything about it. And I went up, I came out to look for my phone, and it was gone. Something I realized, oh, shucks. And the car next to me was gone. And then I've contacted the garage, and they were like, oh, they're so sorry. They heard that this has been happening. But anyway, besides the points, they took the phone, and then I got like a Google Authenticator on my Facebook entry and all that stuff. And basically, I hadn't backed up that Google Authenticator code, the two-factor.
Oh, shit.
And so it won't let me back in my page. So I'm completely locked out of my personal profile.
You have been going through it. But first thing, like your account, no, now you've been hacked. Like, you've been going
Facebook since December, and I will not, like, put any effort in to get it back.
Nah.
I got a fan page that I accessed through my wife's page because she was a manager of my page. And if I need to post or say something, I say it, but like, I don't have to like see all my friends, what they're doing. And I'm not really that interested. And it's so cool, bro. Like, no Twitter, really no Facebook. It's like a new world because in some ways we've been in a new. Yes, I phrase. We've been in a new normal since 2006, since we adopted social media as a way of living. Right? We adopted social media as this is how you interact, this is how you get around, this is the way the world works. And then I don't have Twitter, and then I lose the Facebook, which is my only like real point of access to the public and to my friends. And then for like the last 6 months, I don't hear from them.
Right.
Through this. Social media, and bruh, I feel like
your life been peaceful.
This is how life is supposed to be.
Absolutely, but it took a thief at the garage to teach you that. So maybe it's there's a lesson in everything, right?
I was telling some people before you get the headlines. I was telling some people yesterday. We were chatting about it. We had a weird scam on public holiday. So on public holiday, my wife, she went to. I live in Hillcrest, and she went to the bluff for the day to do some stuff. And she calls me and she says to me, are you busy doing something to my phone? I was like, no. And then I go look in my, and then we realized basically that they stole her phone number. Like, so someone stole her phone number. Like, you don't think about, someone stealing your phone number. But you've probably covered this before, but for us, this was like, they SIM swapped her number and ported it to a new SIM card. And so her phone went dead. No, and she said there was a message, but she was so busy with what she was doing, she didn't look at her phone. There was a message saying your number has been ported. If this is a fraud, whatever, click yes or click in, whatever. And she didn't like see that message till like 3 hours later. Until she tried to get on her phone, no signal, and she used someone else's phone to call me. And I said, no, it's not me. And then we kind of realized, and then we couldn't, so there's no way to stop it, right? And then what they did is they hacked into her WhatsApp because most WhatsApps don't have any protection on it. So once they got your number, they just re-download the WhatsApp on the new number.
Right.
And then started messaging everyone in the group she's in. Like, hey, I'm stuck at the bank. I got no money. Please send me 1-5. Which is a weird.
Oh, my God.
And then this is the craziest part of it. We couldn't like get through. So I've done some work for Vodacom. She's with Vodacom. So I called some people I knew and they got it like stopped immediately. So I was like, okay. I said, like, you can start and stop. And then like an hour later, there's more messages coming to me. Hey, I'm still waiting for the money. You haven't sent it from her WhatsApp number.
Oh my God.
I was like, what? And then they're like, oh, there's nothing they can do about that because WhatsApp is like it's separate from the phone number in some senses. So once it's activated on a card, it can still work. you have to get the card Slim Swap back.
So
now
so
we don't think about
you can't do that unless you have the SIM card, and obviously no criminal is just going to hand that over to you. So it's
no.
You basically, she now has to hope that none of her friends are dumb enough to fall for this and try to help her at the bank.
Yeah, but fortunately, like a lot of like, but the thing was, they started. There's no context when you go into WhatsApp. The only thing they have is the groups that you were in. You get added back in those groups. So they go through the groups. Those like my daughter's like school groups, like karate, kids party. So they started asking random people, "Hey, I need 1-5."
And now she's like, that woman that's asking for money in the school group chat. Like, hey, bro, pay your school fees, dude. Why are you asking us for money?
I'm married for the second time, so that's my daughter. So even though she's in those parent groups, those parents don't really know her. So if someone messaged me, come, is your wife asking for money? Like,
yeah. Well, I mean,
is everything okay? You know how they are. Is everything okay? Are you guys holding up?
Yeah.
Fortunately for her, none of her friends know that she's a doctor, so people know that she doesn't really like look for money. but still.
And then now the chats that they're having in their homes. Oh, you know that doctor, she doesn't know how to handle that money, hey? She makes much money.
Exactly.
But she's asking me. Me.
Yeah, they kill us. They make so much money of COVID and they still ask people money.
I think it's ironic that we bring poor Yaku in every time we end up talking about fraud, because I mean he was even discussing some of this stuff on his show just yesterday. But Yaku Voigt is of course the CEO of Catalytic, and he has his own show on a Tuesday morning. How are you doing, Yaku? You good?
Good morning, yeah, very well.
I don't know if you heard any of that, but Carvin was just talking about how when your phone gets stolen, they can get into your old WhatsApp groups, which is something I hadn't thought about at all. And his wife had her phone stolen, and then these criminals were trying to like get money out of her school groups and the mom groups that she's on. I mean, this is just another level of what you talk about so often on your show when it comes to like fraud and internet security and all of that shit, right?
Yako, before you start, Yako, one more thing, Garrett.
Hmm.
We went to Vodacom. Yako, just listen to this. We went to Vodacom, and we had the number flagged for fraud on the next day, on the 17th, right? So flagged for fraud. They said the number's been flagged for fraud. We'll do a SIM swap back to you. You can have your number back. We got the number back. The next day, they reversed. The scammers or whoever reversed what we had gone in person to do. So she came to Vodacom in person with her ID and proof of address, and they reversed over the phone through a call center what we had done in person and sent it back to them, sent ported the number back to the scammers' SIM card.
How does that happen?
So it's quite interesting. I wonder, like normally when you go to the mall, you see all of those cell phone shops full of people, and I always wonder what they go and do there. It's probably that. Because why else would you go there? It's the worst.
Well,
that's awesome.
You know,
we spent the whole June 16th and day after in like there was a holiday week. My wife asked me on Sunday, "What did we do this holiday?" I said, "We were at Vodacom."
Literally, yeah.
Yeah.
We were literally at Vodacom. That's what we
you
did.
You know,
if you go to the mall where Simpiwe and I go to, which is here in Midrand, it always amazes me that you can go past the Vodacom or Telkom Mobile or MTN. The shop is always full of people, and I always wonder what do they go do there. And then you can stand there for hours.
Mm. You know, everything we do is so connected to this now, and I just think about it.
Bro.
It's worth saying again, because I mentioned this 2 weeks ago when it happened to a friend of mine. Now we've got your wife's story, Carvin. But yes, if you don't back this stuff up, and if you don't have a plan, you don't think about what could happen if you lose your phone, if it's stolen from you, you could lose everything, your bank details.
Bro.
Your investment stuff, your personal information,
phone number,
everything.
That's a big one.
Yaku,
all your OTPs go there.
How come these scammers? Like, how come these scammers are so good at this stuff too? I mean, you know, you would think that these are unsophisticated people, but my God, they're better than any of us at hacking, at getting the information out of the phone, at switching it on, even if it's been blacklisted. I mean, all these things that they tell you that will happen when your phone gets stolen. It seems that these criminals are way cleverer than the people who made the phones.
Well, Garrett, if you think, what do you spend your time on? You spend your time on your craft to obviously, you know, live out your passion and make money.
Sure.
And for these scammers, it's big money. You know, it's very, very simple. And you've got scale because there's a lot of people that obviously have phones. So, it's money. It's a business. And I think that's the way that people must think about it. Now, I sound like a broken record about it, where every week in the show we talk about, you know, there's no business that's too small to be a target of people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we just need to take it a lot more seriously. Interesting. I was watching an article, looking at an article this morning where ShopRite is under ransomware threat at the moment, you know. So, and I mean, those guys spend millions on security. So it can happen. It can literally happen to anybody.
But Jaco, no, I'm not giving the scammers the credit in this case. And you can help me, Jaco, because the scam they pull of SIM swapping is piss easy to do.
Yeah.
SIM cards have no protection. The technology of SIM cards hasn't been improved in, 20 years? So this thing that happened to us is happening all over the world. So they basically, all they needed was information that wherever they got from, whether it was from the TransUnion League or whatever.
I just want to throw this in here. Why do we spend so much of our time fikeing and rekeying and making sure that all our information is up to date? You know, we have to fill in forms every time we do anything, including getting a new phone. And it seems that it's useless to us and it's useful to all the bad people. Isn't that annoying?
Yeah. Because the phone, no matter how much protection you have on the phone, there's nothing you can do about the process, the Vodacom or whatever, when someone calls in. That's security outside of every individual's control, Jaco. Like, how do we around that?
I don't know. I mean, with the risk of pointing fingers at Vodacom, I mean, there's got to be some form of collaboration or something between the scammers and somebody inside. Like, I mean, I think if you try and go and do a SIM swap on a legitimate account, you'll probably find it's not that easy. It's like Garrett says, you probably have to fill in 100 forms. Yeah. So I think there's got to be some form of collaboration.
Someone on the inside. There's some crook on the inside who's helping them, for sure.
Scary, guys. Like, you know, scary. That's because whether you're dealing with F&B or you're dealing with Vodacom, you have got all your personal information in the hands of people who are poorly paid in call centers or wherever. Like, that means that we're all at risk here, because those people then, if you're saying that it could be an inside job, does that mean that we're all at risk of, like, at some point, someone inside saying, you know what, there might be a little buck to make on the side from giving this person access to this person's number?
Well, you were talking about Twitter earlier. I saw there's a, I think she's a doctor in Durban, actually, Corin Marrow or something like that. She posted on Twitter last night, a friend of hers phones got stolen in KZN somewhere, and people took they then unlocked the phone and transferred R70,000 out of a Nedbank account and applied for a personal loan. So I mean, it can be really scary.
You know, if you think about it, if you had R70,000 in cash, you would lock that away somewhere safe. You certainly wouldn't put it in your pocket and drive around and take it to the shops with you and be on it while you're at the traffic lights and you know.
You never won the lotto.
Yes.
You would put it in your pocket, walk around the wood.
Unbelievable, huh?
There's a reason why Cyril had all that money in the sofa, Gary. Yeah, there's a reason.
Cyril, exactly.
I was about to say, now, where would you put it away? Because apparently your sofa is not an option anymore.
Listen,
mattress.
This is actually a really good question. Like, if you had to hide cash, let's say a briefcase full of money, which could be R1 million, right? I mean, R1 million isn't that much when you actually squeeze the notes together and put elastic around them. You could put that in a briefcase, R1 million. If you had to hide that, and don't give away any of your actual hiding places here, but where the hell would you even put it? Cyril sewed it into a sofa or put it in the sofa cushions. Where would you put it?
Wow.
So, Gareth, I have the perfect answer for you.
Here we go.
You see that beautiful bookcase that you have right behind you?
Yeah.
That's where I would stash it. Nah. Like, every book would have you know, the money. Because nobody reads, nobody attacks the books. Even robbers, when they come in, I promise you, the thing that they never take is books. They always leave books behind. They will take the sofa. They will take the TV. They will take your laptop. They'll take cables, for crying out loud. But books, guys, they always leave books behind. Even the the Bible, to be exact. Get different versions.
Bible.
I promise you.
That'll keep
no one messes with the Bible. It'll keep them away.
But you're going to have a lot of Bibles for $1 million ransoms.
Exactly. Yes! There's New King James Version. There's the Young Woman's What. There's so many versions of the Bible. Get it in Latin. Get it there. It's done. I promise you, no one's taking that money.
Yeah, but doesn't Garrett's bookcase look like one of those ones in the movies where you pull one book and that whole thing flips?
Oh, yeah. I wish. I do think that's not a bad answer though, Simpiro. I mean, that could be a very good plan. I just want to let Yaku, before he goes, because we've got like 4 minutes here, I just want to talk about data centers, because this is also something you've been exploring on your show. So just quickly give us some insight into what data centers are and why they're important, and perhaps give us a little taste of what you're going to be talking about on the show next week as well.
So Gareth, I sound like a broken record all of the time. Last night, here in Midrand, where I stay, Sims, I got home after 6, and the power was off, and Inter and I decided, well, we've got nothing to do, so let's go for a run. And I was surprised by the amount of generators that everybody had here. So you know, because and then what's also fascinating is everybody that's got a generator, they don't have one light on in the house. It's literally every light in the house is on. and the reason why I find it so interesting is because, you know, when load shedding resumed this week, everybody says load shedding is back, but it's here. It's with us.
We know
it's going to be here for quite a long time.
Right.
So we had a discussion on my podcast yesterday, specifically about the fact, similar to what we spoke about now about security, where, smaller businesses tend to think their data centers are not really for them. It's a big business type scenario.
Yeah.
And we firmly believe that taking into account physical security, plus then the fact that we know that load shedding, we're going through a difficult time, that everybody should have access to data center services. And that's our focus for the probably until the end of July, where we're just going to preach everybody must go into a data center, and then we remove all of those problems around physical security. What do you do when they break in and steal all of your equipment, and how do you deal with power outages and filling up generators and all of those kind of things? So for the next like I said, until the end of July, that's what we're focusing on. Every business that we're talking to, we want you in a data center. We don't want you to host stuff at your premises, because it's just not efficient and easy. It's difficult.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, we the cloud is now an old topic of discussion, but everybody kind of understands what that is. And you can upload and download as you need to from the office, but why have all of your information actually stored on a hard drive at the office? It's ridiculous. Then you're asking for trouble.
There's still so much of that, and specifically in the smaller businesses. I mean, I had a customer this week where if I had to show you a photo of what their computer cabinet looks like, you'd have a heart attack. And every time somebody just gets close to that, something goes off. So, and it's not their core business, but it causes so much anxiousness, because, you know, the business goes and stands still when that thing doesn't work. So, yeah, that's our focus for the month. And Gareth, maybe I was thinking about it. Anybody that sends us a mail to letsconnect@catalytic.co.za to inquire about our – so we've got an SME offering from as little as 2,000 rand a month for the space, the power, unlimited internet – that's let's call it a special offer that we're running now. So anybody that sends a mail to letsconnect@catalytic.co.za stands a chance to get a year's free worth hosting, awesome, just by doing that.
All right, then just give us that email address one more time, because people always, they only remember on the third try.
Okay, it's letsconnect@catalytic.co.za. And then just send us a mail and say, I want to know more about your data center services. Sure. And you can get a you get the chance to get a year's free worth of hosting.
Absolutely. Awesome. Thank you, Jaco. Always nice to see you. We'll catch you next Tuesday.
Thank you very much. Nice chatting to all of you.
Very nice, man. Jaco Voigt, cool. The CEO of Catalytic. We've got Carvin Goldstone with us this morning, Simpiwe Mtatwa, me and you, and we will be back in just a moment at 7 o'clock. CliffCentral.com, live on this Wednesday morning. Hope your day's going beautifully so far. If it isn't, we'll try to fix that in the next hour. CliffCentral.com.